one shot at a time.
Welcome back to the Enjoy the Walk podcast. Excited to dive into today's episode. We missed a week last week because we're the Common Men podcast. We got too tied up with work, with life in general. So happy to bring into this week, this week's events. A lot going on. The weather up in the East Coast here is absolutely prime right now. We've had a lot of golf in our hands, a lot of golf clubs in our hands the last couple of weeks, Dante. It's just such a good feeling to be back out in the golf course and not looking outside dreaming of warmer weather. The warmer weather's finally here.
Yeah, but it kind of, I don't know if this made you aware or anything or kind of made you question, but to me, it kind of just snuck up on us because it seemed like we had like a pretty decent March. And then, you know, April, it seemed windy and kind of chilly. It kind of took a while for it to really kind of ramp up, and you would get those warm days and then you get back to the cold days. But it always seemed like it stayed around 60 degrees, but it was always windy. So it always seemed like you're always in pants and a polo and kind of like a hoodie or pullover, to the point where you're like, damn, like, yo, like what's going on? Because usually by the the second half of April, you're starting to, you know, you're wearing short sleeves, and sometimes you can, you know, it gets warm, like it's early in the morning, maybe you wear shorts and a polo, and then you're taking off the pullover half, like after nine or a couple holes in. It, to me, it just seemed like it took forever, and then a flip of the switch, it's 80 degrees.
100%. There was no warning. There was just winter to summer real quick. We hit the spring mark, I think early April, right? The first day of spring. And then all of a sudden it was off to the races, which you'll get no complaints out of me. I'm happy to have the warm weather here. It looks like even some of our bad days now are like low 60s, which is nice. That's just, you know, sweater weather. That's just sweatshirt weather. So, you know, it's been nice to be back out in the course, even if it is in just two layers instead of three or four.
Yeah, three or four, then you're pushing it and you can't swing. You can't feel anything. You're just super restricted. You know, you got your polo and then maybe one extra layer on top. And you know what? I'm happy with that. If that's the most I have to put on, we're really not complaining. It was just kind of a backdoor moment in my eyes. But, you know, I'm pumped. I mean, it's getting green. Same thing kind of if you want to go off with like the pollen. It was like 1 minute you're like, yeah, the pollen's coming. Next thing I know, I walk out the door and car's green.
I tell you what, and I don't mean no disrespect to anybody who suffered from COVID, but the pollen this year and people's allergies, pollen is actually, I feel like, wrecking more people, putting them on the sidelines than what I've seen in COVID. And again, no disrespect to anybody who's had COVID, but pollen is wrecking people this spring.
Yeah, I've seen some people pretty knocked out from it, and it'll get you. And that's what I'm saying. It just kind of snuck up on everybody. And next thing you know, you got people coughing and sneezing all over the place. And then you're freaking out like, all right, is this allergies or do you possibly have COVID? If not, get away. Get away from me.
Well, I tell you what else snuck up on us was personally the GAP matches, the MSGA team matches. We didn't have time to prep this year. I mean, you never really do for these early season events. They're just kind of hitting hope when you go out there and maybe get a couple range sessions in and maybe two or three rounds before you truly get to play. But, you know, we talked about myself wrapping up the MSGA team matches a couple weeks ago. We were one and done. We played like an NCAA style bracket down here in Maryland. GAP matches are a little different. You play a couple rounds, you play home, you play away, depending on, you know, what team you're on and whatnot. You guys just wrapped up your GAP matches as well up at Running Deer. You know, who did you finish up with? Where did you play? How did you play? And you know, is there anyone left in GAP matches and what's going on there?
So collectively Running Deer has four teams. One, two, three, and four. It's all based off of participation. And then the teams are broken down based off of handicap. My handicap felt as to where I was with the Running Deer 2 team. Have some work to do if I want to make it to our 1 team. And then there's divisions within GAP. I mean, there's so many teams. I mean, if you go on there and just look who's affiliated with GAP, and you'll just scroll page after page after page to see which course is affiliated with Golf Association of Philadelphia.
If you want to see
they break it down.
I think you see a true anomaly within the game, within this greater or Golf Association of Philadelphia, which is basically the greater Philadelphia, Delco, even Scranton area. Like, it's incredible how many clubs are in that area.
I mean, it goes out to Hershey too. I mean, it can go as far out to Lancaster too, which is pretty wild. And then upwards down to like kind of like it's kind of you're kind of like flirting with Delaware too, because Delaware has their own affiliation. It's crazy. But it's so you get 3 weeks, right? It was like the last 2 weeks of April and then the first weekend in May, I guess. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So based on how it works, based on where you fall and how many teams you get, there's multiple divisions. There's a double A and it goes all the way down to F. And in each division, there's a section. So there's a total, including your course, 4 teams, and it's a round robin. And from there, you would play each week. You would play a different course. And there's a 12-man roster. 6 would go home and 6 would go away. It's match play. You can get up to 9 points, so 3 individual, and then 3 for the team, and then like your partner for individual. So there's 9 points there. And it's just straight up 18 holes. So it's kind of not like your traditional match play. If you get shut down, it's like over, like mm-hmm. early. Like you can still grind out and play. Like you play back, front, back, middle, or overall.
A little Nassau action.
Pretty much, yeah. But it's a lot of fun. I mean, obviously, it's friendly competition. It's more for the camaraderie. It's more for people to get their chances to play courses that they have may never heard of or may have never get step foot on. I mean, you play greats of like Marion's in Gap. You have some of the originators and like those who have done it since like day one. You got Marion, Huntington Valley, Philly Cricket Club, Lulu Country Club. So those are kind of like the OGs of it. And I mean, last year our guys had to play Marion, which was kind of cool. They were pumped. So like 6 guys are like, sweet, we get to go there. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. So like on the 2 team, we played Laurel Creek Country Club, which is kind of in the Medford area of New Jersey, Morristown area of New Jersey. And then we played Great Bay, which is down by Ocean City, New Jersey. And then Atlantic City Country Club, which you and I played in the Barstool Classic. Again, another short course down in New Jersey.
But a classic. But like you were
very
saying,
classic.
It's an absolute classic.
It's got history.
Course. Oh, the history. If the lockers could talk in that place.
Yeah. So I was fortunate that I played. So our schedule went Laurel Creek, AC, Great Bay. And I went away the first week and I was home the next 2 weeks. I got my shit clocked the first week, got clocked the second week, and then was finally able to, I was like, dude, it's the 3rd week. I'm home. I know my course, you know, hope like, let's just grind and just at least get half a point. Like I'm not getting shut out. I mean, I got shut out. Like I got 0 points the first 2 weeks and I was just getting frustrated but it's match play. I mean, anything can happen.
Exactly.
I mean, I was playing with guys who, and that's, again, like I've said before, the beauty of this game is the fact that any age can play. I mean, I was playing guys upwards into their, like, early, mid-70s, and these guys are hanging and cleaning me out. I mean, they just – I was, like, kind of joking. I was like, why do I keep playing against the retired guys who don't have to go to work anymore and can just play every single day of their life?
Seems like
I said,
an unfair
I'm just
advantage.
Getting – I was getting smoked. And obviously too, like you match play, you make different decisions because you're like, all right, well, this guy's probably going to go. You're thinking that this guy's going to just be an absolute stick and just shoot like 6 or 7 under. I mean, I have guys from the first team, they were playing in the double A division. We were in the B division. So the double A division, the guy, I think his first 2 matches, a total of 14 birdies. He went up against his opponents had 14, two of his opponents collectively 14 birdies. He told his third guy, he goes, listen, man, I'll give you three birdies, and that's it. Any more, we're taking this to the woods. And he was like jokingly, but seriously, because he's like, dude, I'm just getting smoked. But you know, we didn't do hot. All four teams got smoked. It just wasn't. It wasn't our year. Obviously, we have some work to do individually and as a team. Maybe some better decision making. I don't know. It's kind of, you have to. It's tough because you don't really get practice rounds for these. You just kind of just show up and play. The best thing you can do is if you know somebody that's played the course before, kind of pick their brain or go on kind of the apps to kind of get a feel as to what the layout looks like and kind of get for your sure. yardages and set. But you're not going to know kind of the terrain. You're not going to, you know, how the course plays. Is it firm? Is it fast? Is it soft? Is it wet? Like, what's the weather going to be that day? Because when I went to Laurel Creek, man, I mean, the course was an absolute gem from tee to green. It was beautiful. And as I said it before, I considered it the Glen Mara, and we all know my love for Glen Mara up in Scranton, Pennsylvania. I considered it the Glen Mara of like South Jersey. Just the way kind of everything felt, the way like the layout was. And I struck it well. I drove it well. Like
about,
yeah,
like you said, the course it is, because you have so much love for Glen Mara with good reason because of the incredible course that it is. But yeah, to say that you have so much love for another course just like that, it does say a lot about the property.
Yeah. And the guys we played at were just such gentlemen to their, I mean, and that's the cool thing. Like you're out there to compete. I'm out there to win. But at the same time, they're like, if you have any questions about where to go, we'll tell you. Or if you're on the tee, they're like, hey, left is bad. If you want to miss right. I mean, they kind of coach you through it. But at the end of the day, it kind of came down to figuring out the greens. And it took me probably to the 17th, 18th hole to figure out the speed and kind of the way they broke. And we've discussed this before, I think, off camera. It was like, how do you go and prepare yourself to a course like that where the green complexes and speed are just the complete opposite what you play on a day-to-day basis.
Oh, for sure. It's extremely tough to, I think, to score first time, even second time around a place like that when you just don't know.
Yeah.
But it's fun. I mean, you hit the nose on the head. Yeah. I think it's just exciting. It's exciting golf because you never know who you're truly going to get paired with. Even if you know the course pretty well and know who plays there, you could get paired with two like random guys you never know.
I mean,
you could get paired with guys that you've recognized and you've played with before. You just never know.
And here's the beauty of it. I'm just kind of, there's so much to talk about. We got a lot to talk about. This guy, we can have an episode within this itself, but.
All right, guys, as you know, spring is upon us. The perfect weather to wear sweatshirts, the perfect weather to wear pullovers. We've got the Heaven's Gates sweatshirts on our website now. Go check them out. They're on sale because it's after Masters Week. So go check them out, www.enjoythewalkpod.com. While you're there, check out Single Strap Society. You can check out the Single Strap Society hoodies, as well as joining as a member of Single Strap Society. Now, what does that get you? That gets you a Single Strap Society tour towel from Winston Collection, also with the Enjoy the Walk podcast badge on the other end. Awesome tour towel. Dante and I both game it on the daily. Really gets in those grooves, cleans up the clubs well. Also, as a member of Single Strap Society, you get cups with the Single Strap Society logo on it, so you can have your favorite whiskey, your favorite transfusion out of a Single Strap Society cup, as well as Single Strap Society tees. Now, they were Masters Edition tees, so get those green and yellow tees in the ground today. Join Single Strap Society at www.enjoythewalkpod.com/Single Strap Society. Now back to the show. So Dante, as we were saying, spring is upon us. The best part of spring, other than these gap matches and team matches, I think, is the U.S. Open local qualifying. We've been mucking it up with a bunch of our followers that are also looking to kind of fulfill that same dream of local qualifying, whether it's Jeff Mosini down in the Orlando area. We've got Billy Grant out in the Midwest in Colorado chasing his dream. That's the best thing about the U.S. Open is it truly is open. If you've got a handicap low enough to go try and qualify, you can do so.
And we got you on the Eastern Shore.
an incredible amount of entries, man. I think they were talking about close to 20 some thousand entries this year just for open applicants. Yeah. Lucky enough to have one pretty close to me. I only have to travel about an hour and 45, which in the grand scheme of things isn't too bad from living where I live down on the Eastern Shore. Not really too many, I guess, US Open qualifier-esque courses down here on the Eastern Shore. We've got a lot of resort-style courses, a lot of like more open-style courses. So I'm headed up to Hillandale Country Club, all things, all God bless, all willing of, you know, my schedule with my job as well. Conversation for a whole nother day. But yeah, this Thursday coming up. So when this podcast releases on Wednesday, we've got a U.S. Open qualifier at Hillandale Country Club. For myself, I have a 10 a.m. tee time I'm scheduled to go off. So it's always exciting, man. I played back there in 2019. I was one under through seven, and then the absolute wheels fell off the bus. And I kept trying to hit the throttle, and there was just no wheels left. So it's exciting, man. It's a really great course. Uber private. So, I mean, at the end of the day, it's kind of, I always approach these like I approach the Gap matches or the Maryland State team matches or whatever. You're getting to play an incredibly well manicured golf course, with the chance of fulfilling like a lifelong dream of making it to sectional qualifier and with a shot at making the U.S. Open. Now, this year specifically, I've got a little extra drive because I've played Torrey Pines a couple of times with Marywood. We played two team matches out there. I've played it recreationally once. So it's super special for me. I want to get back out there because it's like, all right, well, hey, I've actually played this course. I've walked it multiple times. It's something that I feel like, damn, if I get there, it's kind of like, I don't want to say plausible, but I'm looking here. I've got a picture in my room, of all the past U.S. Open golf courses and all the past U.S. Open champs. Tiger Woods is the last person to win at Torrey Pines. So whoever takes it home is going to etch their name right under Tiger Woods as the next U.S. Open champion at Torrey Pines. It's kind of just incredible to think like all 20,000 of these people, or, you know, a little less, a little more, that apply for local qualifying have the same damn dream I do. It's exciting.
I mean, when there's an opportunity, I mean, you might as well just give it a shot. I mean, the worst thing that can happen is, all right, you don't make it. Yeah. And then even worse than that is if you don't sign up, you don't. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, why not? Like, why not give it a shot? Why not? Let's see what happens. This could be my day. This could be my career. Like, if you don't kind of take that opportunity, like, you never know what's going to happen. It's like, if you choose like, I don't think my game's ready enough, or like, you know, the last couple of weeks I haven't been playing that great, so, you know, I'm not gonna give it a shot. Who cares, man? Like, give it a shot, see what happens. I mean, that's what's crazy. Like, anything can happen. Like, we were just talking about the Gap matches, anything could happen. I mean, who the hell knows what goes on? Like, that's like they say, that's golf. Like, That's the game we love. I mean, you can have a great day, you can have a bad day, and then the next day it's the complete opposite. But
it's true. I mean, it's truly the like epitome of giving a guy a shot. And I mean, like, no other sport has this kind of open qualifier into a national championship. Like, if you think about it, like, there's no, I guess there is in a sense because they play such a long schedule, but it's not like a guy's walking off the street into the World Series. It's not like a guy's walking off the street into the Super Bowl. A guy's not walking off the street into the, you know, World Cup. It's just, it doesn't happen in any other sport the way it can happen. A guy could be sitting on a bar, like behind, like as a bar back, he could be working the bar, you know, on Wednesday night, play himself through local qualifying, play himself through like sectionals, and all of a sudden he's working behind the bar at Torrey Pines before the summer started, and all of a sudden he's walking inside the ropes at Torrey Pines midsummer.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the same thing, like you were just saying, like, you know, if you're playing another sport and you're in the minors or something, or and you're trying to make it big, you're trying to make it to that final stage, and you have to go through a crap ton of teams, a crap ton of games. Like, I mean, you got to basically live and die the sport. Golf, I mean, if you're good enough and you have the established handicap, you sign up, you just show up one day, play one round, get into another one, get to that, and then get called in saying, "Hey, yeah, you're going to play in the U.S. Open." I mean, it can happen that quickly.
Well, and granted, right? Like, we're not saying any Joe Schmo can pick up a golf club out of nowhere and go compete for this thing. You've got to be a pretty well-versed, competitor, a well-versed player in the game to make some noise and actually make it there. But really cool. You know, we've been close friends with the Bag Tour and those guys down there in the Charlotte and Duke area. Zane Lewis got through out of that Duke region into sectional qualifying. So excited to see what noise he can make. And it's just like the more and more you look around, it's everyday people who are really putting themselves in contention to go play at the U.S. Open. When the U.S. Open was held up at Shinnecock, I wouldn't say close friend of mine, I guess, but a close like acquaintance of mine from Pennsylvania. He went and played golf at Penn State. Cole Miller went and qualified. Mickey DeMorat went and qualified. Liberty University there. So it's like you start to make a real small world out of people who do qualify, but then it starts to kind of relate and say, holy shit. Like, these guys did it. You know, they aren't everyday tour pros. They aren't your top 50 in the world. Like, they're kind of everyday guys chasing the grind. Now, granted, they might be mini tour guys or guys out there playing a little bit more frequently than you and I, but there's everyday guys making it happen and actually qualifying for a U.S. Open. It's incredibly exciting to kind of feed off of those juices before going into a round like this on Thursday. All I can think of and all I ever watched the night before a U.S. Open qualifier, Francis We Met, greatest game ever played. And if anyone who's listening here can figure out why that movie means so much to me and how much we've used it as a podcast or where we've used it as a podcast, we'll send you some free merch, a little tea pack, a little sticker pack. We got new stickers with the new podcast cover art. We'll send you some of that. We'll send you some of the Spring Tradition sticker art that we did. Figure out and let us know where we've used a little bit of the greatest game ever played influence in this podcast, and we'll send you some merch, some merchy merch. But yeah, I'm excited. Hopefully I can get out there and play Thursday, God willing, and maybe keep it a little more than under par through seven holes this time around.
Yeah, right. Maybe nine.
We're hoping 18.
Hoping 18. How's their prep? You just kind of going in there pretty loose? Just,
you know, I learned a lot. Shout out to Trent Feltz. Shout out to those guys out in Palm Springs, Eric Hoskinson, the Palm Springs Golf Championship. I learned a lot about myself out there, kind of going in cold and having to like restart the system pretty much, you know, oil the engine a little bit before you get out and play. I learned that it takes me a solid 36, probably 54 holes with a good range session or two in between to really get firing again. I was ice cold going into the first round of competition out there, and I shot like 86, right? Just absolutely could not find the club face, had no clue where the ball was going, because it was just, I didn't play out here. It was January. I didn't play for like at least a month or two out here. Went in and just tried to hit one range session and go, you know, hit the, you know, start. Didn't work out for me too well. Where I really peaked was the third round. I shot 74 on stadium course, you know, from pretty much the pro tees. So I was like, okay, I had a lot of birdie looks. So it wasn't just like a fluky, you know, 74. It was a well-played 74. And then I went out to Rams Hill, shot one under there, and then went back and played, I think, one other course with Trent, Classic Club. I went out to Trent with Trent and played Classic Club and also played really well there. So it was like, all right, by the time I got 54 holes in, you know, a practice round and two rounds of competition, that's when the game actually started to show itself a little bit. So this past Saturday, I went out and played 36 with a good buddy of mine, you know, shook the rust off the first round, kind of started to focus a little bit more the second round, and then went out and actually walked nine holes last night, and then followed that up with like about a 45 minute to about an hour just chipping session. Just really like having a 15 yard chip, a 25 yard chip, and a 35 yard chip. And basically, you know, back and forth. So I go 35, 25, 15, 35, 25, 15, 25, 35, 25, 15. Like, I would just kind of, each shot was to a different yardage just to really like hone in the wedges. And then wrapped up with about another hour of putting. So I'm feeling like if I don't touch the clubs between now and Thursday, feeling confident. You know, I hit a lot of the little areas. Short game is always huge for me because that's where you're going to score. You can spend a lot of time beating balls and not make a whole lot of progress past muscle memory, I feel like, too. If you're not working on a swing change, beating balls is kind of useless, in my opinion. You got to go out and play. So that's where I'm at.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of playing. And honestly, I can completely agree with you when it comes down to chipping and putting, because, you know, that's the scoring sector, because I shot, you know, high 80s when I played that one round away at Laurel Creek. Of course, I've never played before. Mm-hmm. Only kind of the best thing I looked was just kind of going off of the apps. And, you know, it was pretty fair with the fairways, but the greens were like super slick. But, you know, I was hitting pretty much almost every fairway. I was hitting almost every green. And it all came down to just like, if I missed the green, it came down to chipping and putting. And
yeah,
if you can kind of go in there knowing and feeling extremely confident with that part of your game, I mean, it's going to do wonders, you know, coming down 18 and,
well,
you
and know, it's your funny final too, score, right?
What, like, you signed.
It's funny. You think about people are like, well, why are you hitting so many chip shots from that yard? Is like the number one thing you get when you tell people that is like, oh, like, do you plan on missing greens? It was like, no, but I plan on not being perfect either. You know, I'm not going to, chances are with a little bit of extra added pressure, I'm not going to go 18 for 18. I'm going to miss somewhere along the line. And that's
even on a regular round, that's shots. It's just going to happen.
For sure.
It just happens.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I feel prepped, and I always feel like too, even if I didn't have a chance to go out and play, if I work on those 15, 20, 30 yard chip shots and I'm really catching them clean, the rest of the game falls into place for me after that. Like, even up to the driver. Like, I feel like if I'm hitting a good wedge session, the rest of the game's going to be there for me that day. It's just, I don't know if it's just me or if it's kind of a good way to process, you know, a full swing, but the wedges were there for me. I was hitting them solid. So I'm feeling really confident about hitting the ball the way I am and excited to hopefully get a hot putter. I think that's all it boils down to at the end of the day, is just getting a little hot putter and making some putts.
I agree there.
So I will be wearing my Squares golf shoes. We want to
shout out. That was going to be my next question.
We want to shout out to Squares first and foremost for the kind of back and forth we've been able to have with them since they launched. Their owner, Rob, shout out to you, buddy. Seriously appreciate the openness and the willingness to come on the podcast, not once, but twice. Second time around, come on with Terry Hashimoto, the founder of Body Track, which basically proved the science in what Squares was saying, that it does truly add yardage to your game. If you're going from a sneaker based shoe or even kind of a classic golf shoe, won't call out any other brands, but just saying a classic golf shoe and moving into the Squares, they add distance. It's just a proven fact. It adds distance, adds speed, because it's a great anchor for your foot to be in on the ground. And that's where we get our power. So Squares, with being the partnership we have with them, sent us a little goodie pack, which Dante's is coming in the next couple weeks.
They had to like special make mine because the size they didn't make.
I do think Dante's getting a cobbler from like Northwest Indies, like specifically hand stitching his Squares right now. So probably, feel special man. About that. Feel special about that.
Yeah, that was funny to find out that information. I kind of chuckled because
who'd have thunk?
Usually it's like the big and tall is where once you're getting into like the 15s and 16s of shoe sizes is where you struggle to get. You know, I mean that's an extra, like that's like you're basically making four shoes in the two, right? I didn't think it would ever happen on my end of the spectrum, but hey, listen, it's very appreciative. Like, we can't thank them enough. I mean, the shoes, I mean, you wore, and they're the newer versions. So they did some modifications and they just look so clean.
They look like, we talked about this, they look now like a modern golf shoe, right? Like the first iterations, super comfy, super stable, but they just, it seemed like they had, I guess no better way to put it than just room to improve, right? Like they were clunky. They were great. They fit well. They worked well. They were comfy as shit, but they looked clunky. And no disrespect, because I love the shoes.
I guess you, Yeah, I mean, I guess you can say it was more of like it wasn't. There's always like that modern fit per like each decade or during that time of era, like whatever you want to say, like during that current time, during the moment, right? During the present, like there's always that's the look that everybody's going for, and it just there's nothing wrong with them. It wasn't the look that everybody wants,
For sure.
you know,
And I'm telling
and.
you right now, I walked the 36 I said I played earlier this past weekend. I walked all 36 in the brand new square shoes, the white and silvers with the little blue trimmings, straight out of the box. Not like broke them in, not nothing. Most comfortable day I've ever had in a pair of shoes. I took them off and kind of just like went right into my flip-flops. I didn't have to like crack my feet. You know, I wasn't sore. My heels weren't barking. Like, it was a great day. I almost forgot they were brand new shoes. And that's the number one thing you could ask for, straight out of the box. And
That's when you're
I
walking.
can't say this enough about how good they look. Like, I wore them with blue pants and they just look sleek. They look I just say they look amazing. I can't get over how amazing they look. And this isn't even my favorite pair. Like, they sent, you know,
Yeah.
they sent us the John Daly, the I guess you could call them red, white, and blue loudmouth pair, that I got. And they also sent the Sir Nick Faldo pack, which I don't think I might ever put on my feet. They're so good. Like, they look so good, I don't want to wear them.
Yeah, that's
So
insane.
I'm incredibly gracious of getting these squares, and I cannot wait to wear them all. The question is now, do I go stupid obnoxious and wear the red, white, and blue shoes for US Open local qualifying? I think I have to. I think I absolutely
Yeah,
have
why
to.
not?
Yeah. I think I'm gonna. I absolutely think I'm gonna.
I don't even think they're that loud. I mean, from the pictures I saw, one of the coolest portion is the flag within the kind of the clear gum coloring of the actual grip of the sole of the shoe within itself. It's
Yeah.
underneath, and you get like the flag right there.
You got the flag and it says USA on the bottom. We talked about this in our initial interview too, with just the initial pair, right? Like, not even the new and improved versions. We talked about this with the initial pair. The detail that goes into these things is just absurd. The detail that is in this shoe, from the laces themselves having like the non-slip little nubs on there, just to the, I guess, the focus on pressure points within the shoe, and that's where the spikes are, just to the engraving of the squares logo. You go on and on, and they again hit the nail on the head with these designs. So and it's just really cool to see too. Like, they're finally seeing, I think, their light in the time in golf right now. John Daly's a big supporter already. Nick Faldo's a massive supporter. He was kind of the first big name, but now you're seeing guys like Sepp Straka wear them every day in the PGA Tour. You're seeing the women's model finally come out, and ladies on the LPGA Tour get behind it. Like, long drive professionals get behind the shoes because of the obvious distance gains. These shoes, and I mean, it's just incredible to see the wave finally starting to catch on, because they truly are a one. I can't even like describe it. They're so good. It's incredible how comfortable these shoes are. So
Yeah.
we got to talk about John Daly actually legitimately contending in a PGA Tour tournament, wearing the square shoes, but also having a little weird looking bag, I guess you could call it. I want to talk about this. We'll transition here from squares to John Daly and what he had in his bag. It was actually a PGA Tour Champions tournament, so let me put that out there. Him and Mike Weir kind of battled it out down the stretch. But he had Tour Exotics clubs in his bag. Dante, I know you're a tinkerer and I know you're a big equipment guy.
I knew Tour Exotics.
When's the last time you heard Tour Exotics though? And what's your thoughts on Big JD kind of switching to that route, basically driver through low irons?
So the last time I heard of Tour Exotics was kind of when I got fitted for like the first time for clubs, right? And that was almost upwards of 6 years ago, I guess you can say. And it was for a three wood, and he hands me this club, and I was trying to be like super unbiased, right? He's like, you're gonna like this one. Yeah. Okay. And I'm like looking
Sure.
at it and like, you know, pretty simple classic look from, you know, looking from the top of the crown and at the face angle. And it's like, oh, cool. Like, yeah, this looks pretty sleek. It looks pretty sharp. I mean, it seemed like it was a smaller head too. And then you like flip it around, and then there's like these weird like metal little wave grates like on the bottom. I guess somehow it was their technology when it came down to club impact turf interaction and forgiveness. It kind of almost seemed like, as if my understanding was, it kind of almost it seemed like old school like lawnmower blades, and it just cut through the grass, right? And kind of just made it just like as if it wasn't there. So almost as if you had like a perfect lie no matter what. But I mean, listen, I was testing, I was hitting it pure, and I think I went with another model because the numbers were just better.
Yeah.
Not, you know, not going off of looks or anything, because I mean, who really kind of cares what the bottom of the head looks like? Because that's not
Right.
what you're looking at. And obviously you want it to perform well, you want the sound and the feel to be good, and you want the numbers to be good. And obviously when you if you're looking down at the crown of a club, you're going to think like, you know, do I feel confident and do I like this look? Even though, like, even if the numbers are well, do I still like looking down at this club? To am I going to feel confident? And do I like the look? And that's kind of like the only really remembrance of what I dealt with when it came to Tour Exotics. Obviously, I know they do across the board with the bag. I did read that he went, I guess they said, what do they say? It was more game improvement players irons. So,
Yeah.
you know, my understanding of that, it's you're getting that still that compacted shape of like a player's irons. So there's still a smaller head, but it has like slight like a still with like the less offset, but it has a thicker top line and it usually has a wider sole. So it kind of gives you a little bit more juice as when you're coming into the ball, not something like, you know, like a blade where it's like paper thin. When you're looking down at it and it's like super tiny, you're like, oh crap, I don't think I'm gonna be able to hit this. But they're not super large to where you're like, whoa, this thing looks like a giant spoon.
Yeah.
And clearly it worked for him because he was battling it out.
I mean, it was incredible to see old bearded old man Winter, John Daly, coming down the stretch and having a shot to win a tournament. This guy is just pure entertainment no matter when he's on TV. He could be dead last and have no shot at the tournament, and I'm going to sit there and watch John Daly play golf.
Do you think he's I guess you can say, do you think he could be considered one of the 40 million needle pushers down with this new incentive
Oh,
for
with
these
this new
guys?
PGA Tour incentive, I think they need to make a PGA Tour Champions incentive because I think John Daly absolutely moves the needle. I think he, you know
Right?
what's crazy, especially right now with his quote unquote like comeback and he's like battling a little bit of cancer and whatnot. I think John Daly might move the needle a lot more than, you know, we talk about Sam Burns winning this week. I think John Daly moved the needle a lot more than Sam Burns this week.
Yeah,
And Sam Burns
definitely. I
is
mean,
top
everybody.
37 in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you look at this. I'm interested too because we talked about Ryder Cup a little while back, and we were talking about guys who, you know, that incentive, they move the needle, they don't move the needle. There's a lot of guys, I think, even inside that top 12 that might not move the needle as much as John Daly.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
I love it. I absolutely love it. Well, I'll tell you, I think someone who moves the needle just a little bit more than anyone we've talked about so far, Miss Amy Bakkerstedt. We saw her come onto the scene back in, I think it was 2018, maybe 2019, not exactly sure, but everyone remembers the crazy awesome moment on the 16th hole out at Waste Management with Gary Woodland. She popped up on the scene, made this incredible bunker saving par, and the crowd went wild. And Gary Woodland was just like left starstruck, basically. He said, man, this girl's incredible and whatnot. So she's 22 years old now, and she plays for Paradise Valley Community College, a JUCO college out in California. her team's playing for a national championship at the JUCO level. The first Down syndrome athlete, I think, man or woman, that's going to compete for a national championship of any collegiate form. So incredible story out of Amy Bockerstedt. Woodland had made a comment before saying she's going to do great things within the game of golf. Amy, you are my hero. Just what a great story. How cool would it be if her team ends up taking this championship home?
I mean, it would be icing on the cake. I mean, it would be like one of the most incredible stories to date. And in sports, I mean, and that's the beauty of sports, right? It's like never let an opportunity or ever let like some type of disability stop you from trying to pursue a dream.
Yeah.
Right. Or trying to pursue something. I mean, you know, you've seen so much in this world and the history of not sports and even like non-sports related things to where, you know, people kind of like, they'll get almost like down on themselves or they're like, oh, I have this issue, I can't do that. And then they don't even allow themselves to try. And I think that's kind of like the biggest thing. It's just like, if you just gotta give it a shot, right? Like we were talking about the US Open thing. Just give it a shot.
It's
you're never gonna know what's gonna happen.
Spot on. I think, you know, you look at things like this, you look at scenarios in which Amy basically said, forget that disability. I'm going to go live an absolutely incredible life. You look at times you might say to yourself, man, I had a rough day, or I had a tough day. Mm-hmm. Today was, you know, bad, whatever bad is for you, however it was bad, whatever. And then you look at scenarios like this and you start to think, you know, put it in perspective. Was it really that bad? Like, what are my blessings? You know, what am I blessed with to still have a better day than someone else who might be at a disadvantage? And why am I complaining about it? Because those are who might be at the disadvantage are still having a great shot at completing some incredible things.
That, or it's like, it's, I guess you can say, like, rather than like, oh, you know, my day sucked, this sucks, I had a bad day. It's like, where you kind of take the positive outlook, right? Mm-hmm. You know, we all struggle with this. I mean, we constantly talk about this too. It's like, well, what positives did we take out of it? What did we learn from today? What did we, can we apply to make the next day that much better? And it's not letting these challenges in front of us that we have to live on a day-to-day basis. Yep. And there's challenges for others that they face even bigger challenges every single day. Not let that get in the way, and they continue to pursue what they really want to do. And I think it really all comes down to that.
Oh, it really does. It's just so exciting to see this story continue to pop up, right? Like, I feel like ever since Amy popped on the scene, it's been time after time after time where you just continue to see her persevere, and you continue to see her pop up on national news outlets for all the right reasons. She's, you know, doing incredible things with the game of golf. She continues to have a great relationship with Gary Woodland. Gary Woodland actually probably looks to her for inspiration and motivation. And it's just, it's so cool. And I hope she continues for her entire lifetime to pop up on the national golf scene. Cause I think no matter what state of the world we're in, or, you know, what state of golf is in, Amy Bockerstedt is always a great story for the game and always something we can look to as a beacon of light and hope for anyone playing this crazy game.
Yeah, I mean that's golf, man. It is open to absolutely everybody, and just give it a shot. You know, don't let things get too much in front of you, and you just kind of just keep pushing along, and always trying to strive to be better. You know, and you know, positive outlooks, I'm assuming, will most likely be positive outcomes
for sure. And I, you know, it's such a great way. I think we can end this podcast talking about this. You said golf is for everyone. A few clubs around the country, around the world, were still kind of almost too exclusive. They were men's only, not allowing women to be inside the ropes, inside the gates at their prestigious country clubs. Pine Valley Golf Club up in your neck of the woods, previous podcast guest Steve Barry, caddies out there. We've heard his stories from inside the ropes, caddying right in front of Ryan Palmer, saving the guy's life out at Pine Valley. Women weren't a part of that story. Now I imagine down the road here this year, next year, whenever we have Steve back on, women are going to be a part of that story. Pine Valley's opening the gates to women as full-time members. This is for the first time in 108-year history of Pine Valley that women will be allowed as members, consistently ranked the number one golf course in the United States. They voted as members. Unrestricted female members will be allowed on the property for the first time ever. Incredible. I mean, I shouldn't say incredible because it's like kind of common sense at this point within the world, right? Like, we're at the point now where if this isn't voted in, you're kind of looked at as like, well, maybe you
should, it's more the question. It's like, what? It's like, sometimes you question, like, why are they doing this now? Like, it took that long.
Yeah. Like, it's what, like what story was about to break that you had to cover it up by letting women come in? It, like, yeah, unfortunately, I mean, that's the conversation you have to have now, because it took to 2021 for you to make this decision. Are you kidding me?
This shouldn't even be a conversation we are having
today.
I mean, it probably should have been pretty much done well before we were even alive. I don't know, but hey, that's like, let's look at the positive thing here, man. Like, we're going to start seeing, you know, women members at Pine Valley, you know, like, dude, it's so freaking exclusive. I live 30 minutes away and I've never seen the damn course. Like, it's insane. Like,
and if you do in your lifetime, you're considered one of the luckiest human beings on the planet. Let that sink.
People talk about it too. And it's got like all this crazy history. And it's like, or you hear someone who's getting the ability to play Pine Valley. It's like, whoa, yeah. like you're now you feel starstruck because this player is about to just go play one of the most prestigious courses and, you know, impossible courses to get on in the entire world. And you're just like, it's just shocking. But then again, like, you know what? It's awesome to see, like, you know, new members, new faces, you know, maybe they institute more changes down the road. Maybe see a little bit less restrictions when it comes to their exclusiveness. Who knows?
I think that's the plan, right? Cause like, Pine Valley's president, Jim Davis, is kind of quoted here saying, on a personal note, I've been thinking about this for a long time. Frankly, it's overdue. He said, you know, what really sparked the fire for us to do this now was playing in one of our spring members weekends with a late friend and member of Pine Valley, Jack Vardaman. He said, during the round, we discussed this very topic. And on the 15th hole, Jack said something to me that I've never forgotten and put into action once he passed. He said, remember, we do not want to be on the wrong side of history. We are not changing the things we love most about Pine Valley. We are simply continuing down the path of making our club more inclusive for all. We want to be proud of the legacy Pine Valley leaves in all our aspects and not live on the side of regret down history's road. I think it's put perfectly, and it's unfortunate it takes a passing of someone to really spark this movement. But if that's what it takes, God bless Jack Vardaman for the impact and the words he said to current president of Pine Valley. And I mean, put it perfectly, it's just frankly overdue.
Yeah. I mean, you know, hopefully, you know, people like open their eyes and really see like the greater things and what this game really has to, you know, bring us down the road. I mean, shit, the shit I hear about Pine Valley, it just seems like they have so much opportunity to eventually, possibly, it'd be cool to see them host men's and or women's events there. Kind of like the Augusta National Women's Am, right? Like,
for sure.
Do something at like Pine Valley. Like, I just think people know it. I mean, you can obviously go on YouTube and kind of see the course. I mean, technology is getting in the way where, you know, it may be exclusive, but in order to get kind of like sights and see what it looks like, you can easily go on Google Maps and look at an overhead view and see it, right? It's not like it's blacked out on Google, right? But yeah. I mean, it'd be cool to see events because the course, when people talk about the course, it's just absolutely insane. It's like you hit fairway or you're toast. And the other coolest thing is like when you're on that hole, that's the only hole that you see. You see no one else. I just think it can bring to so much great tournament golf down the road. I would love to see them do more with it.
Oh, absolutely.
Hopefully with this, it's pointing us in the right direction for that.
I think it is, man. I think if anything's taught us how to be, proactively good human beings, it's been 2020. It's been 2021. If you can take, kind of the gleaming light at the end of the kind of shit tunnel that has been the last year with the, riots and with the COVID and whatnot, like there's been some good taught out of it, and it's a lot of values that I think are going to last generations for the good, right? We're seeing a lot of things turn the tide of the way I think maybe common sense should be, that's not so common, but it's working its way into our society, and it's a lot of good things out of these kind of horrific events. So one of them being, I think, way more inclusivity all around the board, and we're starting to see it in golf as well. So just excited to see how we can continue to grow, because we've talked about this on the podcast time and time again. Just to start, it's so much bigger than what we're just starting to see. Like you said, it's way more inclusive tournaments, it's way more inclusive events, it's way more inclusive just all around vibes around golf as a whole. We've got so much more room to grow, that I'm excited for the next 25, 30, 40, 50 years in the game, because if we're growing this much already, how much farther can we go and how much farther can we push it? Because there's so much more room to be had.
Absolutely.
I love it, guys. Well, as always, you can go to www.enjoythewalkpod.com to check out the latest merch drops. Guys, go sign up for Single Strap Society if you're a big fan of carrying your clubs one strap at a time, as well as at Enjoy the Walk Pod on Instagram and Twitter. You guys can go follow along as we continue to pump out our course vlogs of Royal New Kent, our feature videos of places we play, of places we go, and places we walk. So, guys, till next time, as always, get out there, carry your clubs, tag us where you're at. Maybe we'll send you some free tees, some free merch, if we enjoy the places you're walking and we haven't seen it before, and you shed a new light on a place we might just have to travel to. So till next time, guys, get out there, carry your clubs, enjoy the walk.